Welcome to Manager Tools. This is Kate.
And this is Sarah.
Today's podcast, HR May Not Be Your Friend, part one of two.
The questions this cast answers are, is HR a resource I can use? What can I do to work better with HR? And what should I be careful of when dealing with HR?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. You can achieve significant cost reductions by having Manager Tools work directly with your organization. It's a lower cost per person compared to sending your team to a public event. When we come to you, there's no additional travel or time away from the office for your staff either. We offer a flat fee for our core trainings, $20,000 for up to 30 attendees, either on-site or virtually. The Effective Manager Organizational Training also includes a one-year Manager Tools annual license at no additional cost. Contact Maggie at customerservice@manager-tools to learn more. We talk a lot about HR and sometimes we're mean to HR.
Yeah, that's the right way of saying it.
And we stand by the fact that effective managers need a good relationship with HR. It's just that it can be really hard to have a good relationship with them because incentives around HR are different than ours. And they could be misaligned with your metrics and incentives as a manager.
Yeah, exactly.
We've often encourage people to get an HR friend. And some people we know have great HR business partners, just fantastic. And if you do, awesome. Often though, they also work for somebody else. They support other managers. They're spread a little thin. It's not insidious or inherently bad. It's just that we want to warn you about how to work with HR and do so well, while understanding the challenges associated with it, because there can be challenges about it.
Yeah, exactly. Folks, I think most of us at this point in the evolution of humans have heard the term human resource business partner, or HR business partner, or even HRBP.
Mm-hmm.
And folks, you should know the business partner part is really just kind of marketing to make HR really more approachable and managers more receptive to working with them. It's a little misleading as a title, if you will, in a couple of ways. One, it implies they're your equal when in fact they are not. And two, it implies that their goals are aligned with yours when also, in fact, often they are not.
Yeah. And we admit we may have said some things in the past that would cause you to dismiss our opinions about HR.
May have? Did you just say may have?
Some people may agree with us, and so they may not have dismissed us.
Sure, yeah.
In the beginning, I mean, we're recording this now. It's been 20 years.
Yeah.
20 years ago, and maybe even like 15 years ago, maybe even up to 10 years ago, we often said, Sarah and I did not say, other people said they hate HR. Which, okay, it's because of some of the stuff we're going to cover. So we could say that the new manager tool stance is different, maybe a little bit. I have had positive experiences with some HR people, and I know some really great ones. So we're going to cover some stuff. We have realized that some listeners took our comments to mean that they should hate HR. And okay, we should have known that that would happen. And we are regretful that that happened. And yeah, we've reformed.
Exactly. We don't say anymore that we hate HR because truly we don't hate HR. And we definitely don't want you to hate HR either. It doesn't do us any good to start at a place of hatred. Now, what we like to say is we hate bad HR because, of course, we don't like any part of an organization that isn't doing its job well. We hate bad everything, including bad HR. But we also say there are plenty, to Kate's point, of great HR people out there, and we want you, the manager, to help them be great.
Yeah, support them. In the same way that they're meant to support us and that they could or will if they're awesome. Today, we're going to help you craft a better relationship with your HR organization by suggesting four things, essentially. Your HR representative's incentives are not always aligned with yours. HR's taskings shouldn't be your top priority. What you say to HR is never confidential. And beware the quasi-employee union representative.
Exactly. So let's start with the easy part, if you will. Your HR representative's incentives are not always aligned with yours. Now, what we're going to start by saying is, folks, you should really foster a great relationship with your HR department. They're part of your firm. They're part of your company. They generally want you to succeed. And therefore, you should really want them to succeed as well. In their communications with you, they will no doubt try and do this, try and have a good relationship, try and be very supportive of you. And we want you to treat them as you do all colleagues, with professionalism and kindness. This is, professionalism 101, folks. It's part of the manager tools ethos. Have a great relationship with them because they're people, and you should have great relationships with essentially as many people as you can.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, they don't work for you. They work for their boss, who is probably a line VP at some level above you. Everyone in that VP's HR department works for that VP. They are his or her staff department, and as such are not in your line of chain of authority. Yes, they support you, but they work for that VP and they are outside of your chain of authority. Separate part of the org, separate part of the chart, separate part of, separate piece.
Mm-hmm. Your support wing.
Yeah, and the concept of staff and line authorities is important for all managers and applies to all staff functions. You do not work for the staff people who support your line leadership. And this is where many managers make a mistake. They assume that the HR person speaks for the VP. And while in theory that is true, they are not a line authority to you. So even though, right, you might make those assumptions, they're not the case. And many HR professionals, mostly well-meaning, will regularly mention that what they are doing is for the VP. They might even, in some cases, go further and assume upon themselves their VP's authority and interact with you as if they have line authority over you. And they do not.
Exactly. Now, folks, just because they're not in a position of authority over you, that doesn't mean that you should blatantly disregard what they're saying. That's not at all what we're trying to say. What we're saying is you can hear their requests as requests, not, as many managers sometimes do, commands. And we'll discuss this further when we talk about their tasking you with deliverables. In an ideal situation, HR professionals have previously served in line positions in the chain of authority. That would mean that they would have been managers, theoretically, doing something similar to maybe what you've done or are doing now.
This is rare.
Yeah, it is rare. Exactly. It's very rare. And it is, in fact, something that's practiced in great organizations. And as one can imagine, these HR organizations are fantastic to work with. They completely understand what they're asking you to do and how that relates to the other parts of the job, considering all of the other things that you're responsible for.
They have been in the past part of the organization in a way that you are currently. So they have experience in your area, maybe even in your type of specialty or department, division, whatever it is. If they've previously been an electrical engineering manager and now they are HR, they're more likely to understand what you need. And when you're doing things like interviewing or hiring, they are able to cull resumes in ways that are more specific because, hey, they've been there before. And that is awesome. That is something that will make your experience with them super positive. It also makes them really effective. It can be narrowing, just as a heads up. So if you have an HR partner and they've been in another area, you can find it limiting to your own. For that reason, we should just be aware. And it's really rare.
Yeah, exactly.
As a general rule, HR in and of itself is its own specialty. People tend to go into HR. They are taught HR. They go to college for this. HR professionals will spend their entire career in HR, in staff, not line positions. So they haven't ever been a manager of anybody except HR people, or they haven't even been a manager and they haven't worked in your industry in a position of like industry specificity or speciality. They didn't go to school for electrical engineering. They're generally unlikely in our experience to be knowledgeable about the responsibilities of line managers. They also lack experience in the area in which you work, and their career aspirations are different than yours.
Yeah, it's a totally different goal set. It's a completely different way of thinking about organizational life. It's not at all like the role you're coming from, which is, again, why it makes for an exceptionally rare but really good HR person when they've come from line management.
Yeah, it's ironic that I chose electrical engineer, A, because I'm not an electrical engineer, but mostly because I would suggest that the difference between an engineer and a manager is probably as distinct to an engineer and a manager as the difference between a manager and an HR professional.
Yeah.
If you have had that experience, I know a lot of our listeners are in technical fields. So if you're a software engineer, for example, and you see the difference between being a software engineer and being a manager as distinct, likely that same gap would be a good way to think of the difference between a manager and an HR professional. And nothing wrong with it, right? Although, of course, the electrical and software engineers listening are thinking, well, if choose the technical path, then guys, come on. What are you thinking? Being a manager is not as cool as being a software engineer.
Exactly.
The managers are thinking the same thing, though. So fair warning.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so yes. So their aspirations are different, which means a lot of stuff, right? I mean, it means a lot of things about what they want and their incentives.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And that's not inherently wrong. I mean, it's really good for organizations to cultivate HR talent because HR talent understands legal, compensation, recruiting, talent management frameworks, processes. There are so many things about the human resource discipline that make it its own unique discipline that having a specialist in this area is incredibly, incredibly valuable for your organization. And over the past 10 to 15 years, recruiting and hiring processes have changed so significantly. So it's really, really good that someone is responsible for adapting existing systems, paying attention to new technologies, leveraging those new technologies to improve processes and systems. It's all great. But what that all means for the individual manager is your human resource professional is working toward different ends than you are.
They're also thinking of so many things that you're not thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
Legal implications, you know, numbers in another way that you are. They even just the difference between the way HR thinks about attrition and the way managers think about attrition. I mean, they have insight into things globally for the organization that are bigger often, and most managers are thinking about their own team. And I'm not suggesting that as a manager, you shouldn't be just thinking about your own team right now. I'm thinking that you have to remember that if you're in a part of the organization that's doing better on attrition or worse, et cetera, the way HR professionals would behave around or think about your part of the organization versus someone else's are different than you.
Yeah.
It's different. And that is part of why organizations have departments and divisions and groups. And yes, okay, doing their job certainly means helping you with your HR needs. They're also trying to advance along a different career path. And that might mean, in using my analogy, focusing on attrition in different ways than you. It means typically capturing new systems, creating new processes that make a difference across the organization, not just, again, specifically to you, which is why you have to deal with things like timesheets. I still hate timesheets. It's been 10 years and I still despise them. They're one of those things that it's kind of like waiting tables. I don't think it ever goes away. I don't think the stress of a timesheet ever goes away. And a timesheet is an HR system, right? For many, in many functionalities. Maybe you've noticed that every couple of years, your organization changes performance review systems. Hey, guess what? That's an HR function. Sometimes it's a technology. It's a different review form. Sometimes it's a different way to collect and validate the data. Being involved in the updating of, the changing of, maintenance of performance review systems is a valuable career move in HR. And if it doesn't sound exciting to you, don't go into HR. And honestly, if you think about it from the manager's perspective, how many review processes have you been involved in that were easy and effective for managers, for you? The only one I've ever been involved in that was useful for me is ours here at Manager Tools. And I've been involved in some, I don't even want to use the word clunky because that isn't fair. Just the machinations of the previous review processes that I was in were just massive. I mean, it was the sheer number of forms, like pages that you had to fill out, and you couldn't go forwards or backwards. Insane. A great example is when the system changes and there's no way to compare data from the old system to the new system. There's no like porting over. And okay, that's terrible for talent management. Like, how are we supposed to keep track? What are we supposed to do in the past, et cetera? But HR professionals involved in the change will say, hey, this should go on my resume. It went great. It's a plus for my career.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. If we hadn't undertaken that organizational change, we wouldn't have that plus, hence the system's changing because someone wants to beef up their career. And there's another side of the story as well, though, because it also happens that some HR professionals aspire to great HR careers, but also take a truly supportive role to the managers that they work with. When you find an HR professional like that, make them your friend. Respond to them quickly, stay in touch with them so that when you have an HR department thing that you need to be consulting with someone on, you can reach out. Actually, this morning, it's funny. This morning, I got a text message from, God, when I worked at the University of Alberta, what year did I leave? I've been here for almost 15 years. I got a text message from my HR guy, Tim Bush. Yeah. And he was just one of those guys. He'd been a line manager previously in a different department in the university. He knew what managers go through. He was super supportive. You got to make good relationships with good HR people. Yeah. Because they exist. You just have to make sure that you foster that relationship. I assure you, to Kate's earlier point about how hard some of the systems and processes are to use, there are a lot of managers in the world who are not building good relationships with their HR department because they're frustrated. They're frustrated and they're angry and they're mad and they're nasty. And these things cause HR to become defensive of managers. It absolutely happens. So we have to work hard to build good relationships with HR contacts. And we need to simultaneously recognize the asymmetry of that relationship. Again, do not assume they work for you. They don't work for you. Even when they say they do, and some of them do that, which, by the way, is a really, really good sign. Don't dismiss it outright, but it's not entirely true. Do not assume that what they're asking for or what they're doing is completely in line with what you want. And it's not necessarily their fault. The system they're in demands a different set of behaviors from them than the system demands of you, the line manager.
Yeah, perfect example, right? Your HR professional tells you, I'll do the recruiting and the screening, and you can pick from the people I give you. And that is supportive. We're not suggesting it's trivial. It sounds awesome. They're doing work you literally won't have to do. but this doesn't mean that you can't bring in your own people. We talk repeatedly in our guidance about managers creating their own internal and external benches, people you would want to consider hiring. Don't let HR run the single most important strategic contribution you make to your company, the talent, you know, that you bring in and that you filter for potential positions.
Yeah. To your previous comment, Kate, they don't know what you're looking for in a hire.
No, they don't. They can't. They can't have a level of scope.
They cannot.
That allows them to understand the requirements of every open rec in the organization.
Exactly. No one could. No one could.
Exactly. Exactly. And no one is supposed to.
You're the one with that knowledge.
There it is. Yeah. And we understand that a reason they want to be involved, and maybe more involved than us manager tools, effective managers want them to be, is because HR departments usually get graded on things like offers made and accepted. This is why HR and managers as well ask candidates, if I gave you an offer, would you accept? If the candidate doesn't say yes, HR might not make an offer because they don't want to mess up their statistics. This, full disclosure, no, it's not really fair.
But you do the same thing.
No, I would absolutely do the same thing. I absolutely wouldn't. It's so creepy to me. It's like somebody asking, if I were to buy you an engagement ring, would you accept it?
I think people do that. Dude, there's so many people in the world who would do the exact same thing. They're not being dishonest.
No. It's just creepy to me. I can't do it.
Yeah.
It's my problem.
They're behaving in a perfectly reasonable way.
Yes.
To what is, in fact, a totally reasonable metric.
Yeah, of course.
Given what they do for a job, which is, again, very different from yours.
Right.
If a company is making a lot of offers and not getting a lot of acceptances, organizations need to figure out why. And it's HR's responsibility. They're the ones being measured for it. And guess who the ones are that are impacted by these poor metrics? The HR department.
The pre-offer offer is ineffective. And again, I find it off-putting. The part of the reason I think is because I can't say yes or no to something without knowing some details. And, you know, if I gave you an offer, would you accept? It's like, well, okay, I don't know. What about X, Y, and Z? And it puts undue pressure on candidates.
Yeah.
It's not aligned to the candidate's interest.
Yeah, it's absolutely contrary.
Yeah. I shouldn't say it's like asking if you would accept an engagement ring. It would be like asking if you would accept an engagement ring when you haven't dated. It's like, I don't have any data.
Yeah, I don't have any data. Yeah, exactly. I couldn't say yes if I wanted to. I don't know.
Right. What are the terms? And that's the same thing. It's like asking someone, like, if I bought you a sandwich, would you eat it? It's like, oh, okay, but what kind of sandwich?
Yeah.
What if it's only mayonnaise? I would not eat that.
Yeah.
These are terrible analogies.
I know, right? This isn't the only metric that causes outcomes that influence or affect you as the individual manager.
Sure.
The incentive of offer close rates often also causes many HR people to insist that they be the ones who make the offer to a candidate, along with being better able than managers to describe benefits in detail, which
is a good reason.
Yes, exactly. Which, of course, HR is. But again, them insisting on making the offer while it has a small amount of benefits, which, yeah, good, but also doesn't outweigh the benefit of you making the offer, is, again, misaligned with the candidate's interests and the manager's interests as well. In this case, the manager is the person with the most to gain or lose with an offer being accepted or rejected. The higher, not higher result is much more important to the company than the offer close rate metric that HR is being measured on and therefore is taking, I wanted to say responsibility for, but taking ownership over, because they have this metric, which isn't the most important metric in this entire situation. It's just plain not.
Join us on our executive speaker series call June 12th as Matt DuBois, Senior Director of Capital Development Programs at Americold, teaches us about the value of good questions. Your questions frame your approach to relationships, results, and the development of your team. This presentation will focus on how to effectively use questions to improve performance, reputation, and problem solving without becoming an interrogator. All Executive Tools licensees are invited. Become an ET licensee today to receive your invitation. The misalignment between you and your HR representative means that managers have to be on guard about their relationship with HR and watch for how they behave around the processes that they're involved in. And it might be a reflection of their metrics, et cetera. They're not working against you. It's just that some of what they're measured on makes it harder for them to be a true partner and be 100% supportive of the things that you want. Because again, like, I don't even think they have to make the offer for it to count for them. And I do understand that often HR is better at describing all the benefits and all those things. So it can be both. You make the offer. When it's accepted, then HR makes the call. And then HR gets credit for that one because they made the call, et cetera. I guess two things can be true is part of what I always think about this. The effective manager considers what adaptations we could make so that in a partnership agreement like this one, both parties get things that are valuable to them. And make no mistake, we still want you to put yourself first a little bit.
Yes, I would suggest not just rolling over, rather insisting on things like, to Kate's point, being there when the offer is made to your candidates is definitely advisable for managers.
Right.
Not just relinquishing your control of really important situations and moments. Because again, to our earlier point, sometimes we think that HR's making demands, not suggestions to us.
That's all for this week, y'all. Join us again next week as we continue this topic. And if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to follow, rate, and review our podcast. It helps more people find us and keeps the conversation going. Have a great day.